Welcome to the Tactical Security Podcast.
Welcome to Tactical Security, where we argue cybersecurity practices from a technical and managerial standpoint. Here's what you need to know about today's security tactics.
This is episode 8, and during this episode, we're going to continue discussing the human attack surface.
Good to have you with us. I am Wolf, and by day, I'm an advisory CISO.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids.
And we have our guest, Wendy Nather. Wendy, welcome to Tactical Security.
Woo-hoo. Yay. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
No, it's great to have you on. You know, when we're putting together this lineup in the season, one of the things that was really crisp and clear in my mind was the presentation you gave at RSA, right? The keynote where you held up the spoon and you talked about how security should be like a spoon, right? You don't need a spoon awareness training. You don't need so much. You said so many great things on that stage that when Dave and I were talking, we're like, we have to have Wendy on this season.
Oh, true. Thank you so much. You know, what's really funny is when I was rehearsing for that keynote, the RSA folks said, no, don't use a prop. Don't ever use a prop. You know, props are bad. They always fall flat. And I said, no, really, trust me. This is going to be okay. And luckily it was.
I bet you get that a lot too. Don't do that. And you have to go, no, trust me. I know what I'm doing. This will work.
This flamethrower is perfectly fine. Really.
Yes.
Not for the people in the front row.
Oh, picky.
So Wendy, you know, that as we talk in the season about the human attack surface, how do you define it? How do you look at this area?
You know, it really depends on how literal you want to get. I mean, one of my cats bites my elbow in the morning when she wants me to get out of bed. So I don't know why the elbow, but you know, it generally works. There are so many ways in which we are vulnerable as humans in the context of technology. And the really interesting thing to me is that so much of it is self-inflicted. We are really bad at writing secure code. We often chase something that seems shiny or flashy, or we come up with a, you know, really what we think is a really clever idea. For example, I heard about an application where it was built deliberately to use SQL injection to update the database. And I'm sure somebody thought, oh, this is a really cool way to update the database. Not your normal way. I'm going to do it in a clever way. And it turned out really bad. So there are just so many ways in which we create our own attack surface, not to mention all of the different layers that go with being a human being that an attacker can exploit, you know, our emotions, our cognitive biases, all sorts of things. So, you know, it's a broad area. I feel like you guys could do an entire podcast series on the human attack surface.
It's funny that you say that because that's exactly what we're doing. Very good foresight there. But kind of going back to what you're saying about the broadness of this, of the subject matter, right? The human attack surface. Is there something specific that you come across in your day-to-day security professional activities that kind of jumps out at you like, we're doing this again?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, part of this is I've been in the field for 30 years, 35, something like that. When security started, you know, there were things we had to worry about, like, oh, you know, there's that jerk who wrote the worm, and you know, this is really annoying and it really broke stuff. I mean, even I myself have taken down a whole lot of mail servers on the ARPANET by purposely unbalancing the parentheses in my name variable. It's true, back in the 80s. But you know, those were the kinds of hijinks that we had to deal with. And then there were more things that came up that became more like actual attacks or malicious activity, crimes. But what I think nobody really planned on, least of all, the creators of the internet, was the abuse factor. The fact that people would abuse this technology to be mean to one another in so many different ways. I saw a talk by Alex Stamos when he was CISO of Facebook, talking about, you know, the nation state attacks that, yes, they certainly have to deal with those and cybercrime and everything, but by far the largest area that they had to deal with was simply abuse of the platform. So I think that is something that we really didn't know how bad that would get.
The abuse side of things, when you're taking me back to ARPANET, you know, in the early days, right? We didn't necessarily have to worry about it. It was hijinks. People had to be a certain type of person to even get online. There were a lot of gates to climb over. Right. And, you know, rightfully in many ways, we've torn down a lot of gates. But of course, that's opened up other areas of abuse and other areas of ways that technology can be misused. Where do you draw the line between, hey, we need to make better technology? So for example, I was recently reading the book Designed for Safety by Eva Penzimog, which is all about how to think about from someone who's trying to abuse their partner or threaten their partner, all the different ways that technology can be misused and how to strengthen the tech. Where do you draw the line between strengthening the tech and maybe educating and fostering a better culture on the internet? How do you balance those two?
Well, I think, and of course, now there's, you know, you're quoting great books and I'm thinking of a book and I cannot for the life of me remember the name, but it had to do with global politics and war and bringing up the idea that our societal norms have not caught up to our use of technology. And that's the case in geopolitical situations as well as just regular social interactions using the network. I think part of that is that our norms have to evolve and catch up. So there's a cultural side where we learn that you just don't do that. Take, for example, the practice of collecting data on everybody. You know, a lot of people really don't mind it as long as it's in the aggregate. But when you start singling somebody out and calling attention to them, like, for example, I am on Google Street Maps. If you do Street View, you will see me walking along in my little bike shorts. And I'm right next to the sign in which, on the corner of the street where I live. So the street name is right there and everything. Google has it right now. I don't think that's an issue, but if you were to go pull that up and post it and call attention to it and say, hey, this is where Wendy lives, that becomes a totally different issue. And I don't think we've developed the social norms that say this is when it's okay to focus attention on somebody by pulling up all the data that you have or going and digging for the data. And people do that a lot as an attack these days. Just using the sort of data that it used to be okay for everybody to know. You know, there were white pages in the phone book. You know, of course you would know where I live, but pulling that together in a way that now can be weaponized and, I don't know, mobified, is that a word? Did I just make that up?
I think it is now.
In such a way that, you know, you can call, okay, let's everybody send Wendy pizzas. Do not do that. Please don't. But, you know, let everybody send Wendy pizzas because here's her address. And, you know, look, she's got a little room left in those bike shorts, so she could use a few pizzas. You know, all that kind of stuff. That's the kind of norm that we haven't developed yet. And honestly, I don't see how we could enforce that with technology. That is something that we all need to, you know, develop as a society.
I definitely see your point on that. And I think part of it kind of when you're going back to the genesis of the internet, right? It was really about, and this is for anyone who's listening that isn't really not familiar with the history of the internet. It was military focused on redundancy of information in the different locations. And then they started to bring in universities. And the mindset between the military and the universities was information sharing. It was not really angled on abuse or monetization, because again, that was not the intent with the genesis of the internet. But as Wolf was saying, as the gates were removed and the bar to entry is so much lower, you know, all you need is a phone with some service or even Wi-Fi, then the natural part of humanity is to kind of make yourself look better sometimes. Like, you know, you want to prop yourself up, you want to look successful, but then there's some people that are just naturally bullies, and bullying has been around since before we, you know, humanity could write, you know, or probably communicate properly. So it's just something in us. And I don't think the internet is necessarily the reason why people are not so nice to one another. I just think it's the way people are or can be. And it's really a matter of, I think, establishing the social norms of, you know, be good to one another, right? Like those two guys that traveled in time. See, here, and now I'm having a CRS moment.
Yes.
Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted, be excellent to each other.
Be excellent to one another, right? And I think that's a great message, even though the two of them are not the most intelligent characters in a movie. But I think that is a great message. And I don't, do you agree, disagree, or
want to? No, I totally disagree. We should not be nice to each other. No, I mean, I agree that the internet became an artificial amplifier for everything that humanity is, for good and for bad. You know, I've seen so many wonderful things pulled together to help people, to save people. You see right now whole networks of people helping refugees escape from Ukraine. And that's just, you know, from across the globe. And that's so heartwarming. And on the other side, yes, the worst parts of human nature are also being amplified and scaled in a way that they never could be before. And again, how much of this can we actually fight in technology terms? That this is where we come into design, Wolf, and I know this is your bailiwick, but if we can design security in a way that everybody can use it for their own purposes, then I think they will be able to use technology as a tool for implementing those social norms that we still need to evolve. And I'm not sure if that makes sense, but you know, everybody has reasons for needing security, for needing communication. But in general, we all kind of understand that there are some things that you just don't do on the internet if you're a decent human being, and we need to be able to have a social feedback mechanism to enforce, hey, you know, you got to stop that, just as we do in the real world. So if we can make security and technology as easy to use as a spoon, so that anybody can pick it up, you know, it's very hard to use it the wrong way with a spoon. You know, you pick it up and it just kind of goes in your hand the right way, unless you're a toddler. If we can design things like that, then everybody has the ability to say, no, this is not right. I'm going to fix this because I know how to use the spoon. I don't have to wait for somebody else in a position of authority to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'll just say something really quick. So I think the message you're saying, and it's a great one, is we really need to communalize the demobification. I think I was trying to get the word.
wait, where are we going with this?
The demobification of amplifying the down or the darker sides of humanity, right? Let's amplify the light, you know, the classic story of good and dark.
Yeah. And can we do that? I don't know. Can we stop the bad from scaling and amplifying, especially when, you know, sometimes we don't agree on what's good or what's bad? Or can we rely on it to kind of, you know, with social norms taking over, can we, if we give everybody a vote, if we democratize security so that they can vote with their spoons? I don't know where I'm going with this. It's Friday. if they can vote with their spoons, if everybody can take the steps that they, you know, that they need to individually to help enforce social norms, then hopefully we can get a smoothing function at the very least. I don't know. Wolf, help me out here.
What I like about that is when I think about it from a CISO perspective, there are certain technologies we've done, right, that help both professionally and personally. You think about MFA, where you teach people how to use it on their own personal accounts, but you provide it through the organization. Password managers, where a lot of password managers today, the enterprise-grade password managers, will have a vault for the company and a vault for personal. You think about some of the awareness training programs that say, okay, here's how to do it for your own accounts, your own social media accounts, your family, that also have a corporate component. I think there's a lot of different controls that we can put in the hands of people to help do that socialization. But the other thing I think about from a design perspective is some of the work that's been done on social media platforms, and some people absolutely hate this, but I like it. And some of the studies have shown it works, where you give a little nudge where they're like, before you post that, did you mean to sound the way you're sounding, right?
Yeah.
Technically, you can nudge someone. And then I've got 20-something kids, so I see their Facebooks. And socially, oftentimes I'll pull them aside and go, I know what you're thinking, but did you really want to come across that way to your friends and family members and people who may be viewing this?
Yes.
So I think there's the corporate responsibility, there's the product responsibility, and then there's the personal familial responsibility.
Yeah, or the community responsibility. You're absolutely right. And I like that the feedback, you know, may come back in different layers, because I do not want our kids not understanding or learning about security and not having agency in security until they get a job and their boss tells them what to do in security. I want them to be making decisions at the level that's relevant to them as soon as they can use technology. Like I talked about in my keynote, how we never use parental controls at home. And my daughter, my 17-year-old, came to me one time and she said, I need your help turning on the parental controls on my phone. And I said, honey, why? And it turned out that she wanted help enforcing her study times. And I said, great, you set it up the way you want it. You configure it, and then I'll put a password on it that you don't know. And whenever you want to change it, come to me and I'll turn it off for you. So she's using that technology for her benefit and the way she wants to, not, you know, me enforcing it on her. And that's the way, the direction I think we should be going.
It's actually pretty brilliant and very mature and impressive for somebody to come to their parent and ask, how do I enforce my own or modify my own behaviors to be better academically? I have three kids, one in high school, one in middle school, and one in elementary school. And I actually have to control their time. And if they're not doing the things they need to do before the things they want to do, I have to enforce security policies in the home network. And I got different tools, obviously, from work and things like that I use, but actually, in the beginning, it was very difficult for them, right? There's a lot of protesting. I'm putting that word very, very nicely. But the other part of it is they've learned the behavior that now I need to do X, Y, and Z to get that time on Roblox or whatever video game they want to play and watch YouTube. And I think that actually easily translates or can be juxtaposed into security behaviors. I love what you said about learning the security practices at what's appropriate for their age, which really kind of resonates very much with Hack for Kids and the stuff that I do. And maybe we should have you as a keynote one year. That'd be fantastic. And you can talk about that. And but you kind of really nailed it, because security is not when you start, you know, the world of work and you're the job one. Security is in schools. Security is in homes. Security is when you're grocery shopping, people could be shoulder surfing you. So they just understanding that, I think that'll get them better at using the spoon.
Yeah, I think so. But if it's okay, I'd like to push back on a little bit of what you said there, Dave.
Please, absolutely. We love that.
You know, the question is, did you really need to teach them those behaviors by enforcement? Because then they learned that, well, this is what dad wants us to do instead of this is, you know, something that is going to benefit me. And so I'm going to choose, you know, what behaviors I have to follow. I mean, it does take a while, you know, they do stupid things at first, but we always took the tack that we would say, you know, watch out what you're, you know, looking at on YouTube. Some of the things are pretty gross. And sooner or later, they would go find something and they'd come to me and go, oh my God. And I'd say, yeah, that was gross, wasn't it? Maybe you shouldn't do that anymore. But, or just say, you know, honey, this is what happens when you give your friend your password. Maybe now you've decided you don't want to do that anymore. And so, you know, that they came up with their own norms themselves. We never enforced anything on them. And therefore, it's all internally generated. It's not, oh, I got to do it this way because the CISO says so. What do you think about that?
I'm going to say that and I don't know your kids, but I think they're just a higher caliber of individual.
Oh, no. I bet you they're really, really smart.
I think they're really, well, they're able to look internally. At least this is what I'm kind of hearing, is they're able to look internally and make a good judgment call, where I've told my middle kid, don't go to TikTok. Here's all the reasons why. And then he goes, hey dad, check out this TikTok. This is like, I don't want to look at this. And then he sends my wife and I links and text and group chat. We don't want this stuff. We don't want anything to do with it. But yet he continues to do it. So I wish they were like that. I wish they had that level of caliber. And as they're getting mature and they kind of, my younger kid actually has some of that. He's like, oh yeah, I don't want to see that. I don't go to YouTube channels where they use bad words, because he doesn't want to hear them. But my older kid, you know, parrots everything.
Yeah. I mean, my kid sends me TikToks all the time. And, you know, sometimes I'll send her TikToks. So, and sometimes she'll go, Mom, why did you send me that? Oh, sorry, honey. So yeah, I think it's a lifelong relationship and dynamic that you build with your kids using technology. What do we do together? What do we do separately? What are you going to let them make mistakes on by themselves so that they'll learn? And what things are so important that you cannot let them make a mistake even the one time? I think that's the trick.
What is really interesting about what you're saying in my mind, and I probably raised my kids somewhere between what you and Dave are saying, because I did put in some guidance, but I never used parental controls. And my daughter refused to post any pictures of her face until she was 18, because wow. I might have made her a little too paranoid. What's interesting about that, though, is we're seeing a trend among people in their 20s, which would never have happened for people of our generation, where you're dating and you start sharing passwords to your accounts. Mm. And in our world, that what do you, if a girl I was dating, you know, in my 40s would be like, hey, can I have your password? Cause I want to make sure I can trust you. I would be like, if you can't trust me, then we shouldn't be together. But one of the reasons that is this happening is because as kids, they were taught by their parents, you know, you give us your passwords or you give us access, or you allow us to install software on your computer because we love you. Now, when those kids are growing up and having relationships, they're replaying that pattern.
Intimacy means lowering security.
Yes.
And that is so, you know, that's a very interesting trend, because again, yeah, I never asked my kids for their passwords. But that is such an interesting insight to think about. Are we teaching them that if you love me, you will lower your security for me?
And you know, what's interesting is instead of sharing passwords, because that's something I'm teaching my kids not to share passwords. And even when my oldest kid was like, I think he was like 6 or 7, and his password was like his first name and the number one. And he looked at my wife and was like, oh no, I can't share that with you. Daddy said I shouldn't. And I thought that was good learned behavior early on. Yeah. But yeah. I have contracts with my kids. So they have an internet, it's not just internet, but it's electronic usage contract, meaning if they're doing things that we don't approve of, then they would have to unlock their phone and give it to us, or they have to surrender the device and it goes in a timeout, not them.
Wow, and acceptable use. That's amazing. What other paperwork is involved in your family, Dave? I gotta know.
We'll take that offline. Having a tactical focus on this podcast, so what would be the one tactic you would want our listeners to walk away from in the context of the human attack surface in cybersecurity?
I would encourage everyone to sit down and think about how security serves you personally in the way that you use technology. How does it serve your employer? How does it serve your community? And think about the different ways in which you can make different decisions on an individual level than your employer might make. You might already know all this, but you know, thinking about it, especially when it all converges on the same phone, you know, that you are using both for work and personally or whatever. And I would also encourage you to think about, this is a question I've been mulling over recently, is as a community, what do we owe one another in cybersecurity, in this ecosystem? Not just, you know, okay, everybody's got to protect themselves, but what do we owe each other? What should we be doing in security for the good of the community? You know, what is our civic duty? I don't know if anybody has to go look up those words in the dictionary now, because we don't teach civics in school anymore. But, you know, how do civics apply to technology and cybersecurity? And if you have thoughts about that, I'd love to hear about it. I'm Wendy Nather on Twitter. Feel free to chat me up there.
I really like that as a takeaway. Perhaps because I'm community focused myself, but that concept of what do we owe each other? What should we be doing for the good of the community? When we think about how broadly technology is now deployed in all facets of our lives and how blurry that line has become between personal and professional, I think that's a great tactic for us to take away and consider into the future. With the technologies we're deploying, with the technologies we're building, and as we discussed in this podcast, with the next generation we're parenting.
And I would also say from that final couple of statements from Wendy is, it just sounds like, in summing it up in two words, accountability and ownership. Take accountability for what you're posting, if it's the not nice things, and or even disinformation, and then own it. So if you post something and you make a mistake, it's okay to say, I made a mistake. It's okay to put out some kind of errata or a correction. And as long as you don't have, like, you know, harmful intent, right? And I love it. And I completely agree. And we try not to always agree on this podcast, just to keep things interesting. But I think that was a really great close and something that people can
take. Just don't sign any EULAs that Dave hands you.
unless you're biologically linked.
Yes.
Cool. All right. I guess you want to wrap it up, Wolf?
Yeah, let's do it. Well, Wendy, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. This was great.
Yeah, thank you.
And this has been Tactical Security with Dave and Wolf. Join us for future episodes where we will continue to dig into tactical tools and practices.
Stay healthy, everyone. Question truth and be better.